Greet each one in Jesus' name this evening. So as announced, the title is Gentle versus Biblical Parenting. I'm going to talk about a trap that is catching some parents in our conservative Mennonite circles. Now, I must admit, I was not at the planning committee meeting when they planned Winter Bible School. It was a Monday, I believe, and I was Sunday night. I preached at Lakeview, and my wife and I were intending on driving home through the night, making it for the meeting, and we got caught in a bad snowstorm, and it took three times as long to come home, and so I missed that meeting. And I got my assignment when I saw this title, Gentle versus Biblical Parenting. I was a little confused. I thought that my wife and I, as we raised our children, we were both biblical and gentle, and I didn't understand. I was a little confused. I inquired a little bit about it, and then I learned that, oh, this term gentle parenting is a thing. This is a doctrine. This is a teaching about something better than disciplining our children. As the older generation did, this is an answer to what didn't work in the older generations. And so I did some reading about it. I actually bought two books and read some about it. And there's two disclaimers I'd like to make at the outset. One is that there's a lot of variation in what is termed gentle parenting. So as I try to describe it, you might find some writer that would place the emphasis a little different. So there is some variation among writers about what gentle parenting involved. And I'm also here to say tonight, maybe to your surprise, that not all the concepts taught in gentle parenting are wrong or unbiblical in and of themselves. And I'll point a few of those out. The title suggests tonight that it's either or, gentle or biblical. And actually, parenting and disciplining children, correcting children, and helping children grow up to maturity is not that simple. It's not just 1, 2, 3. It's not this or that. It's rather complex at times. But it is not difficult if we follow God's pattern. And so, gentle parenting. Let's take a little look at this term, this idea. Oftentimes, well, one of these books that I got, there's this tagline on there that says something like this: if you want to stop being angry with your children, this is the answer. And so it sets up this picture that the old style correction discipline is angry parents snapping at their children, and this is gentle parenting, this is the answer. Well, I don't believe that biblical parenting is parents being angry with their children. And another comment on one of the books was that if you want to learn to stop yelling at your children, this is the answer. The old way was frustrated parents yelling at their children. I don't believe biblical parenting is yelling at their children. And so gentle parenting is more relationship focused. It guides children with empathy and respect and understanding. Well, we need to have empathy and understanding of our children. That is important in biblical parenting. But it emphasizes connection over punishment. Well, connection is very, very important. It focuses on collaborating with your children instead of dictating what they shall do. You work together. We talk through this of what ought to be done, what they ought to be doing, and how they ought to be doing. And so it's a joint project instead of a parent saying, look, here's your chores for do this and this, giving them direction. That's a dictator, and that's harmful to children. They need to learn that together as a team, parent and child, you tackle life. That's some of the emphasis of gentle parenting. Gentle parenting has a strong promotion to avoid shame and punishment and replace it with positive reinforcement for good behavior. Don't embarrass a child. Do not say anything bad. Don't make the child feel like, oh my, I didn't measure up. There's silence on that subject, but reinforce when they do good and praise them for doing good, because children want to do good and they'll shine under that. And it's harmful to have too much negative as you talk to your children. So you focus on positive reinforcement. It teaches parents to be more like a coach to our children than a lawgiver. We'll talk about that term a little later. One who teaches principles of right and wrong. Rather, you're a coach to help them along rather than someone who has some set lines. They outright teach, both of the writers that I read teach, that corporal punishment is abusive to a child's emotions and it teaches children violence. Now, there's a couple faulty premises that I believe that this whole thing is based on. One is this premise that children don't want to be bad. They're just not capable of doing our expectations until they mature more emotionally. And they'll talk about the fact that the frontal lobe of a child's brain develops by 12 years old, and that's the part that does problem solving and sorting things out. But the prefrontal cortex doesn't get fully developed until the early 20s, 22, 23. And that's where judgment and impulse control and emotions, that's where those decisions are made. So children can't control their emotions. They're not capable of doing it. But what's strange to me is while they teach that, they teach that you work with them and use their judgments to help, like you collaborate with them to use what they have to help figure out what they should do. But you just said that their mind is not developed. I don't know how to put that together, quite frankly. And the second faulty premise that I'd like to point out is that they focus that punishment equals social distancing and broken relationships. When you punish a child, you distance yourself from a child. And that's not true. And we'll see that a little later in biblical concepts about how God disciplines those that he loves. Now, sometimes parents do discipline in anger and frustration, and that equals distance. But that's not biblical parenting. It's this assumption that biblical correctional parenting always involves frustration, raising your voice, stirred emotions, and abused children. And that's not true. Sadly, though, I believe that one of the reasons there is a push for gentle parenting is that some of us in the correctional biblical parenting camp have left our emotions get stirred, and they've seen that and they said, we got to do something different. And so they went over here. That's not the answer to fix parents' problems who are struggling to discipline children. That's not the answer to create a new platform. In fact, it's my observation that children who are raised in gentle parenting type of settings, many of them come to the same frustration and distance from their parents as do children who were raised with raising the voice, hollering parents. They often come to the same end of distance and frustration with their parents. And so gentle parenting, they like to tell us that the old ways of discipline failed our generation. One of the challenging things about raising children is that as parents, we get one chance through this to raise our children. Like, you know, mother hen, she hatches out a batch of peeps, and then the next time another batch of peeps, and the next time another. Well, you only get one set of children as we go through life, and we want to do this right. I remember working at a place where there was a Christian man. He was not a Mennonite, and he and his wife had, I believe, two children, respecting their third, and we were talking about family life one time, and he told me a strange thing. He said, you know, my wife and I, we follow this certain book, a certain writer they liked about how he taught how they should train their children. We follow that book to the T, because he said, then if our children don't turn out, it's not our fault. And I never did the calculation of whose fault it's going to be, because we are the parents that need to raise these children and answer to God for it. And I can't blame it on a writer in a book. That's why God has given us a book to follow, and when we follow this, then it works. Well, so an example, perhaps, of gentle parenting. Let's suppose 7-year-old Johnny was asked by his mother to take the garbage out, and he melts down in a temper tantrum, fussing and whining about always having this job, and his mother's picking on him. As a gentle parent, you should talk to Johnny. You need to tell him it's okay for him. It's okay for him to not like this chore. In fact, you understand why he would feel this way. And sometimes you feel this way in life. There's nothing wrong with feeling this way, but we must think through this situation. We have a bucket of garbage. And if no one takes the garbage out, the kitchen is going to stink. And you want to live in a, oh, okay, well, somebody needs to do this. And this is how you collaborate with Johnny to help him understand he should take the garbage out. You see, you must understand that this child doesn't want to misbehave, that they're throwing this fit. He probably is emotionally not able to do anything different, and you must talk him through it. You certainly would never make this child feel ashamed of this temper tantrum, or that will really make him melt down, which you've perhaps seen that already. When a parent goes to correct a fussing child, it gets worse before it gets better sometimes. And you certainly wouldn't punish this little Johnny. Or you'll teach him to be more violent the next time, to kick harder and fuss. But biblical parenting says, you need to stop Johnny and say, Johnny, you can't act like this. Address him kindly and firmly. Say, no, Johnny, we don't act this way. When you're given a chore from your mom, you don't act this way. Now, I said that parenting is not 1, 2, 3. I can't write this like, look, you take this step and that step and the next step and it's all over. Because there's so much variation. There's a possibility that Johnny will stop his tantrum and listen to you. And you might give him direction. And he might follow through. And that might be all that happens. But if Johnny continues to kick and fuss and fume, and you address him and said, Johnny, you need to stop, you're probably going to need him to take him off to a private room. You're probably going to need to talk to him about this. You do not do this. I'm going to need to spank you because you can't act this way. And you give Johnny a spanking. And then you take Johnny back up in your lap and you talk to him about, well, make sure that he understood what he did wrong, what he should, and that you love him as a parent and must correct him, because you can't go on in life doing this. It's harmful to you. It's not right. And whatever all those words you put to that. So, to go a little farther with this subject, I'd like to think a little bit about who is God. You see, we say sometimes that children learn to know God through their father and his life and work. We as parents represent something of God, and it's our responsibility to teach our children something of God. But who is God? And as our children grow up, they must learn to know this God. Who is he? What is he like? Is he like a gentle parenting parent should be? Is that what God is? Now, I've also been told that children understand the church through their experience with their mom. They look at God the way they looked at their dad, and they look at church the way they looked at their mom. I don't know if I totally agree, but I've been thinking about that a lot. You can think about it too. Who is God and what is he like? There's three words that I'd like to use tonight, and these, God cannot be reduced down to just three words. God is much more than just three words. But there's three words that I'd like us to think about when we think about this parenting subject. And how can we be like God? And in what way, how can we prepare our children with how they've related to us to be ready to relate to God when they're at the age of accountability. The first word is benevolent. The benevolent God. Benevolent God. The second word is lawgiver. And then the third word is just. Think about the Garden of Eden. The benevolent Creator made such a beautiful garden that all of us would love to spend a week. You know what? If there would be the Garden of Eden, if there'd be a place today that you could pay, like we go to the cabin or go to some resort. We don't go to resorts, but go to some vacation spot. If there was a Garden of Eden that you could go to, it'd be pretty expensive. And people would pay the money to go spend a week at the Garden of Eden. A benevolent God created a beautiful garden. Why of all things did he put one law in there? Only one. Of all the trees you can eat, but not this one. Because God is a God of law. And then man had to challenge that one law. And when he did, then God, this just God, brought punishment. Adam and Eve felt bad the day they walked out of the garden. And you and I still feel bad that we're sons and daughters of Adam. There's shame upon the human race for being sinful. Thank God through Jesus Christ there's no condemnation. That's who God is. Remember the story of the flood. This benevolent God who gave so much to humanity and expects a response one day, he said, it's enough. And he brought judgment in a flood. Ponder the story of the 42 little children mocking Elisha. Go up, thou bald head, go up, thou bald head. And condemnation fell on children. Two she-bears came out and tore them. That's God. That's God. You know, it would be interesting to me to ask one of these gentle parenting writers to, for example, write the story of the Tower of Babel the way God should have handled it, like a gentle parent should handle it. It would have to sound like this. God would come down. He'd say, I got to go look at this. I'm concerned about this. He'd come down and he'd say to those men, he said, now, you men have impressive intelligence. I'm amazed at your ingenuity and your pulling together, your teamwork. It's tremendous. But you know, we need to make an adjustment here. You know, you don't cast judgment. You don't make them feel bad. You'd have to redirect them. Look, how about I get you started over here to build a city and like fill the plain instead of something that goes up to the heavens? That's gentle parenting. God didn't do that. He came down and with one swipe, he created all the languages, and I still feel bad today when I can't speak fluently in Spanish. And I think about the Tower of Babel. I wish those men never were trying to build that. I wish the world was all one language. But that's God. A benevolent God who is a lawgiver. And when the law is broken, he's just in correction. Well, I believe that the ultimate gentle parenting push, the ultimate, when you push it to the end, I said some of the concepts as you look at them are part of biblical parenting, but the ultimate push is contrary to God. It's contrary to the nature of God. You saw that in those stories. I think the same line of thinking of gentle parenting is the same line of thinking that rejects the existence of hell. How can a God, a loving God, punish eternally? I think there's a connection there. Well, let's talk about biblical child training. There's a lot of verses we could turn to tonight, but there's two passages, one in Ephesians and one in Colossians, that we all know by heart, that I'd like us to say by memory about how children should obey their parents. First, Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. All together, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Colossians 3, 20 and 21, very similar altogether. Children, obey your parents in all things, for this is well-pleasing unto the Lord. Fathers, provoke not your children to anger, lest they be discouraged. Could you quote those without leaning on me, leading the way? Very simple. Children are to obey. Parents are to teach. Bring them up and not provoke. Not turn them toward anger and bitterness. A couple points I'd like to make tonight on biblical parenting. The first point that we must think about is that children are born with a sinful nature. Gentle parenting says children don't want to be bad. Children are naturally good. And I know that children love to please their parents. Personalities vary on this, but children generally love to please their parents. But children are born with an Adamic nature, with a sinful nature. Proverbs 22:15 says, "Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him." We must understand that our children by nature will do the things that are anti-God. And it should not surprise us even if the minister's children or the bishop's children do something carnal in school, because they all are sons of Adam and daughters of Eve. They are. And they have that Adamic nature, and they need help to be delivered from it. They need correction to drive it from them. Romans 5 talks about the fact that by one man's disobedience, sin came upon the whole human family. So it's simply not true that children are basically good. Number two point is that a truly loving parent will discipline his child. If you love your child, you will discipline him. Again, Proverbs 13:24, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son. But he that loveth him chasteneth him as few times as he has to." No, chasteneth him betimes. When there's love, there's chastening, there's correction. And we saw that in the traps. This is the third time that we're together at the same place. That lesson goes well with this message. We need delivered from the traps. Sometimes we need parents to deliver us from the trap. And you know what? As we learn to relate to a trap that parents help to get off of our neck, it's a preparation for us to learn how to get the trap off our neck before God when we're accountable before God. It prepares us for that. Proverbs 19:18 says, "Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying." That verse tells us that there's coming a time when there's not hope. It must work on it when they're little. I feel a little sorry for parents coming to a meeting where we're going to talk about child training. I remember feeling scared that my children would act up in church and that kind of thing. One of the dads at one of the other meetings said, his wife on the way to church said, "I'm probably going to cry the whole way through this, realizing that I'm not very much of a parent." And that's not the goal of tonight's message. The goal is to inspire us to continue to do step by step, little by little, what we can, because it's not a 1, 2, 3 and it's all done and we go on to the next project. It's a daily thing. But correct our children while there's hope. There is hope, and it does make a difference. I believe that correction early is important, and a spanking for bigger wrong choices while they are little, I don't think you should spank for every little thing. I think we need to be careful with that. But a spanking for the larger, clear disobedience, dishonesty, then equals a relationship and a voice with them when they're older. Because it frees them. And it must be with love and connection, not a driving them away, not a beating them because we're frustrated with them. No. It's the rod of love and correction. And so, Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his crying. There does come a day. There does come a day when the disobedience gets bigger and the disrespect gets worse. Some parents can tolerate it. 1 year old, 2 year old, 3 year old, 4 year old, 5 year old. They get ready to go to school and suddenly they're not, they don't respect authority and they begin bumping with the school teachers, and parents try to figure out how to just help them so it doesn't show up so much. And you get 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, the door is going shut for changing that respect for authority and listening to, the door is going shut. It needs to be done while they're young. So point number three is very closely related to this. Remember, we're talking about, we need to think about these three words and try to duplicate them, since God is a benevolent God, who's also a lawgiver, and he's also just in his correction. As parents, we need to try to be those three things to some degree. The third point is that children must be taught to hearken. They must be taught to, there are laws of God that they must keep. We don't have the privilege to change the laws of God so that my child didn't cross the line. The line is set. A lie is a lie. Cheating is cheating. And you can't redefine it. And it needs cleared. They must be taught to hearken. We are called as an authority to teach and train them. They must learn to listen to God ultimately. Proverbs 29:15 says, the rod and reproof give wisdom. I like that. The rod and reproof. Rod is the correction. Rod is the discipline. And reproof is the words of correcting and helping them to understand what they did wrong and why it's not okay and who God is, and that it's the laws of God and we must do what's right. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself will act like they do in Walmart. Community children in Walmart. Bringeth his mother to shame. Correct thy son and he shall give thee rest. Correct him. In the moment he'll feel sad and he'll feel bad and he'll wish he hadn't done it. But then he will have rest and you will have rest. Because you corrected it in an honorable, loving way. Yea, not only shall you have rest, yea, he shall give delight unto thy soul. Delight unto thy soul. One of the hard things to bear in life is to grow old realizing that our children walked away from God, dishonor us, maybe don't even want a relationship with us. That has to be hard. When our children don't serve the God of heaven, break his covenant, walk all over it, that's not the delight of children after God's heart. Well, they must be taught to hearken. You know, over the years ago, teaching school in the upper grades classroom, one of the fascinating things was to listen to upper graders talk at lunchtime about former school experiences and former school teachers. And I would have thought that perhaps as they would talk about fifth grade class or sixth grade class, they would like the teachers that left them do lots of things. They would talk well about the teacher that didn't have many rules, but that's not often the way it worked. They appreciated the teachers that kept order. And they would say things like, we learned more that year. And when they would talk about years where they could carry on and get by with it, they'd often talk, especially if they were beginning to mature, they would talk ashamed, kind of half wishing that the teacher would have delivered them from the embarrassment of memory now of what they did when they were in fifth and sixth grade. That's how they would talk. And so they didn't respect looseness. They didn't look back with fondness on those teachers that just left them go. Children must be taught to hearken. And one of the things that happens When a parent or a school teacher is willing to use corporal punishment for the largest events, the clearly defined largest events, it puts authority in the rest of the voice. I remember numerous times, school teachers would come, young girls who didn't teach before, and they thought that they had the charm and the wit and the ability to inspire children to do what's right, follow the rules, and learn good without ever needing to give a spanking. And that's a noble goal. I don't like when teachers come to school thinking, wow, I wonder how soon I can give the first spanking. That won't work either. Okay? But this, you know, surely, no. And you get started in school, and they'll let you do that the first month, too. But you get down about December, you get down, and especially if you got some Nixie, some clown in the classroom, and he begins pushing the edges, and they realize, oh, this teacher is full of words and no bite. And it's especially true if you got a lady teacher and you got little boys. See, ladies think that when you give a child a scolding, they surely will feel really bad, because ladies are mostly think a lot about feelings. And you really feel bad when you're scolded. But there's something in little Johnny and little Paul sometimes that doesn't feel so bad on a scolding. In fact, there's some little bad bone in some little boys that think it's a little funny when they saw their teacher all fussed up at them. They kind of have to think that's a little funny. And they like to see how fussed up she was, and they go on. And others watch. And this becomes a game. I'll tell you something. There's more than once that I had to tell one of those teachers, you know what, you're going to have to pull the paddle out. You're going to have to, you need to have some clear order, some clear lines. And then when the line is crossed, you're going to need to spank one of them. And the word will get around. You don't announce it in the classroom. The word will get around. She spanked Johnny. And then when you tell them, sit up, put your feet on the floor, and watch at the blackboard, they'll do that because they know that you spanked Johnny. That's how it works. Now, it's not all over with one event. Understand, it's not 1, 2, 3. I'm giving you the principle of how this thing works. So children must be taught to hearken. Number 4, parenting must be focused on the child's well-being and future. Parenting must be focused on what's good for the child, what will help their soul. See, Proverbs 22:6 says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. As I understand the Hebrew construction of that verse, it'd be more correctly rendered this way in English. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, it will not depart from him. The training will not depart from him. It will hang on. So if you have wayward children tonight, you can know that what you taught them, they can't get rid of. That's why some people who once were part of conservative churches no longer are part. That's why they go tear up church buildings. Because the training didn't depart from them. They still feel bad. Something turns in there, and they're fighting against that conscience. But parenting must be focused on a child's well-being. What is good for his future? He must learn truth and good character. It's never to be parenting out of frustration. It dare never be correction because you embarrassed me in public. You can do nearly anything at home when it's just us. But my, when we go to church, sit up and behave. It's not going to work. You're going to frustrate yourself as a parent and your children. Parenting must be for the good of the child, and therefore it's 24/7. The lines, I realize there's probably some differences, and I don't know how much difference to allow, but there's probably some difference when you're sitting in family worship at home versus when you're sitting here in church. There may be some difference, but the greater that difference is, the more you'll struggle with it here at church. Struggle with keeping them what they should be. And so consistency and justice and righteous judgment, it must be the focus for the children. So that their heart, we cannot save them. No, Jesus Christ has to save them, but we can help point their feet in the right direction and teach them good things that will help them to embrace the God of heaven and his laws and not be bitter at God for being a God that has law. Number 5, correction brings release from guilt and should deepen the parent-child relationship. We're not going to turn to Hebrews 12, but there in Hebrews 12, is the passage about whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. And if you're not being chastened, you're not a son. You're not a legitimate son. And it says that no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. But then what? Afterward, it yieldeth a peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. In other words, those who entered into it, and those who accepted it, and those who said, okay, Father, you're chastening me. What do you want with this? And I will listen. Oh, that's what's wrong. Okay, I will change. Some are not exercised. Some fight, and some run, and some push off. And that chastening won't help them. That's an illegitimate son. So correction brings release from guilt and should deepen the parent-child relationship. I love the kind of practice that when larger punishments must happen, when corporal punishment needs to happen, that then the parent has a loving moment with the child when it's all over, that, listen, I forgive, you're cleared. It's not continued to be carried. A frustrated parent carries it and then brings it up and says, well, you did this yesterday, and now you're doing this today. And the child's just getting a pile of things on his record, and he can't get away from it. It's our job as parents to have a clearing and then set them free. And they'll love you for it. And they'll look back from years later and love you for it. Number 6, as parents, we must keep our own spirits under control and our motives righteous. We must keep our own spirits under control. If we get angry, we saw those verses in Ephesians. We quoted them, Ephesians and Galatians. Provoke not your children to wrath. Inconsistency, anger, selfishness will provoke our children to anger. I don't even like distance punishments, like go to your room and stay there for an hour. I don't like that. Punishment should be in our presence and a connection. I remember years ago at school, the beginning of my career in teaching, and then as principal, we had some really bad respect problems in the upper grades. We had some really bad boys. And in the younger grades, some of the same things they would get spanked for, but in an eighth grader, you're not going to spank, right? So one day, an eighth or ninth grader lied, outright lied to his teachers. Not a question. What do? You're not going to spank them. And so we'd figure out things to do. We make them scrub the bathroom floor while everybody else is off on recess. And some of those troubled youth like the attention they got when then their fellow students walked past them, seeing them scrubbing. And then there was this thing about, you almost felt like they looked at you like, what kind of nasty punishment are you going to come up with next? And it seemed to just be in a bind. One day I was talking about it with the school board and trying to get at it. The school board decided that when that kind of thing happens, that would normally be a spanking in the younger grades. If it happens in the upper grades, if the teacher and the principal and the school board chairman, the three of them, reviewed the situation, they could decide to suspend from school for up to 3 days. If it was to go longer than 3 days, the board had to review it. So it was a fairly simple process because principal was at school and the upper grade teacher. Now we called it. And so it happened a time or two. Not a lot of fuss, but a clear line, you can't do this. You need to go home. I remember clearly when one dad had to get off of a roof. He had a crew of men shingling a roof, and he had to get off the roof and come in and pick up his son who had done something like that. And the son later, as he matured, he told me that's the best thing that ever happened to me. He said, me and dad had a talk like we never had. Discipline. We must keep our spirits under control. We can't be angry. We can't be walking around in authority where children are looking at us like, what are you going to decide nasty to do? There needs to be a way to punish and clear. This is not going to happen here. Well, the last point. Point number seven, godly parents will worship God together as a family. I believe that one of the keys to raising a family, one of the keys to keeping God in the center of family is to worship God together. Help our children to understand that we serve God and we are underneath of God. We answer to God. I remember clearly in school, I remember a boy who was giving his teacher a lot of trouble, and as a principal, I ended up getting involved. And he was a pretty intelligent boy, and he had things figured out why I was wrong and his teacher was wrong and whatever. And he was pretty vocal, and at one point I stopped and I said, now wait a second. If I let you go with this, which I'm tempted to do, I'd just love to say, okay, I'll skip it. But I'm going to answer to God. God's going to whoop me for letting you off. One of us is getting a whooping. Either I'm going to let you off and God's going to whoop me, or you're in trouble with me because I must keep the laws of God. And I remember the look on his face like, yeah, there's a chain of command here. There is a God that I will answer to if I don't hold you to this line. This is his line, not my line. Those are the kinds of things that need to happen in our children's minds as they're maturing. As we worship God, this is not about who I just want our family. This is about God. This is about living for him. This is about giving our lives to him and keeping his word. And when we do that, we'll have happiness and joy and the blessing of God upon our lives. And so, well, God told the children of Israel in Deuteronomy that they shall teach them to their children when they sit in their house, when they walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. Family worship. Times of singing together, times of reading the Bible, times of talking about spiritual values, times of understanding that this home is dedicated to God. May the Lord bless every home here with the courage to continue on with biblical discipline, and don't get caught in the trap of gentle parenting.